Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. My name is Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. My boss, Jay Posner. Jay is in San Diego. I am in Texas. First road trip of the season. Jay, the Padres are 4-3. They won their first three games. First 3-0 start since 1984. We know what happened in 1984. Everything's great. They've lost 3 of 4. So what I'd like to do is provide some perspective that we're 7 games into the season. However, and you're going to laugh at me, Jay, I think that this is an important road trip. I think this is a revealing road trip. They play 2 bad teams. They say that they're deep. They say that they're resilient. Look, they've shown that they're deep and they're resilient over the past year and 7 games. But I think, you know, it's time to win some games and actually hit the ball.
Well, I won't deny that it's I can't use the words that it's like a big road trip or an important road trip, but it's an interesting road trip. It's an opportunity to take advantage of a situation where you are playing 2 bad teams. I mean, the Rangers gave up 25 runs in their first 2 games. The Padres haven't even given up 20 runs this season, and that counts all the runs they've kicked away and everything. I mean, they've given up 14 earned runs in 7 games, which is partly why it's, I'm sure, very, very disappointing to them and almost everyone watching, and frustrating that they're only 4-3 because they've pitched well enough to win every game. I guess if they were to go 1-6 or something on this trip, you'd start to be really concerned. You know, winning 4 out of 7 all season would be really good, but you're not going to do that. You're going to have your ups, you're going to have your downs. This would be a good time to have some ups. The Pirates are even worse than the Rangers.
That's what I'm saying.
Very possibly the worst team in baseball. I mean, this is a trip when you look at it. They should win 5 or 6 games. Of course, we said that about the homestand, and they should have won at least 5, maybe 6 games, and they weren't able to do that. So we'll see. You know, no Tatis is obviously never a good thing.
That's a part of why, Jay, that I say that it's important is, like, we don't want to read too much into this, but there's, you know, there were signs of trouble or things that are disappointing. You've touched on them. We'll touch on some more. But one of the things is, like, you don't have Tatis. All right, you got all this depth. What are you going to do about it?
Right.
Right? Because that's he's one of the guys who gets you out of slumps, and he's not there.
Well, right. But there are other guys, I mean, who's been written, I think, today. You know, Manny Machado has 1 extra base hit, and he's hit the ball hard. I mean, there's no question he's hit the ball as hard as anyone in baseball.
Yeah.
But he hasn't gotten any extra base hits out of it except for the 1 home run. Tommy Pham, all we heard about was this was the year for Tommy Pham. He talked about what a big year it was for Tommy Pham, and it was his free agent year. And I don't know if maybe he's in the pressing category, that he's like, so he's put so much importance on this year. Although from what you've said about him in the past, hearing about him in the past, he puts importance on everything. But I think, you know, he has an OPS around 500, I think. Has no extra base.
174. Yeah.
Yeah. So they need Tommy Pham here to do something. And I obviously it should help having Trent Grisham back. He's expected to be back today, be in the lineup. That allows you to have Pham and Profar. I think you touched on this in the newsletter today. You basically have all 4 outfielders in the lineup. So that's a bonus. And it's a situation where this team should be better. Obviously much better than it's shown the last 4 games, and you know, scoring, what was it, 8 runs in those 4 games. You know, Kevin Gausman's a good pitcher. I'm not sure that any of the other guys they faced or anybody that you're gonna, you know, Aaron Sanchez hadn't pitched in the big leagues in a while. They should be better than they've shown the last 4 games. Let's put it that way.
And so you touched early on the pitching, and then, you know, you just said they should be better than they have been. The Padres pitching has allowed 2, 4, 0, 3, 3, 1, and 3 runs. Okay.
And I
only
think
one of those times was more than 4. And in the 4, they won that game.
Right. Right. And I think the 4, a couple of those were 3 of those were unearned, right?
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, they were home. I mean, still after the error, Tim Hill gave up home runs, which seems they're sort of earned, but not really earned. in my book. But no, they absolutely pitched well enough to win every single game that they played, and to lose 3 of them, those are the kind of games where you don't want to look back at the end of the year and you say, boy, we missed out on something by a game or two. And you go, boy, back in that first week, look at those games we gave away. That's why this is the kind of trip where you can't do that. You need to you need to play better and you need to win five or six games out of these seven.
Yeah, what you said, look, they might not win five or six, but what you said is universally true. This type of opportunity, this type of trip, when a team like the Padres, or what we think they are, they think they are, when they go on the road against the likes of the Rangers and Pirates, you're thinking five wins out of seven. That's what the Dodgers do. That, you know, right. That's what the Yankees do. Not right. Every trip, but that is what they're characterized by. And eventually you look up, oh, wow, 95 wins. That's exactly how it happens. The Padres, you know, would do well this year to go 10-9 or 9-10 against the Dodgers. That's how it is. Mm-hmm. But you then ended up going, you know, 6-1 against the Pirates or 5-2 against the Pirates. That's how you get to 95 wins. So that's what we're talking about here.
Well, look at what the Dodgers did on their first. It was a road trip for them, but their first seven games, they played the Rockies. They got beat the first game, turned around and won three in a row. So they win three out of four against the Rockies, which, to be fair, is what the Padres did against the Diamondbacks. Then they went to Oakland, a team that should be better than it's shown, but the A's are struggling right now. And the Dodgers won the first two games, and I'm sure they think they should have won the third one, except they continue to put Kenley Jansen out there as their closer. So you never know what you're going to get. And in this case, they got a loss out of it. But they came out of that 5-2, which I'm sure going into the road trip, you know, if we were doing the Dodger Blue Cast or whatever we would call it, we would have said the Dodgers really need to go 5-2 out of the gate here. And that's exactly what they did. So I think the Padres are kind of in that situation here where they need to take advantage of the two teams that they're playing. I mean, the Rangers, and I guess we can get into the Rangers a little bit now. I'll admit, I don't follow the Rangers too closely. So I was looking up a couple things this morning so I wouldn't sound like a bigger idiot than I usually sound like. Their closer is Ian Kennedy, Kevin. Ian Kennedy. He's almost as old as their general manager. Chris Young is 41. Ian Kennedy is 36. And Ian Kennedy beat out Matt Bush to be the closer. Matt Bush is 35 and hasn't pitched until in the last 2 years in the big leagues. And we don't need to get into the Matt Bush history. But that's what they were talking about, because their top two closers were lost, or one for the season and one's lost now. So that's the kind of team that the Rangers are. They gave up 25 runs in the first two games. To be fair, they did come back and win three of their next four. So they're 3-3. And, you know, they throwing the pitcher Ahihara tonight from picked up from Japan, who's not familiar, of course, to anybody on the Padres or basically anyone else he'll be facing for a while. Jordan Lyles tomorrow is, we're familiar with Jordan Lyles. He's good enough to almost pitch a perfect game as he was with the Padres. He's also bad enough to get shelled anytime he goes out. And Mike Foltanowicz was the former Braves pitcher, who obviously sort of fell off quite a bit for the Braves to release him. These are the kind of guys you should take advantage of is the long way of what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, the last two are essentially journeymen. I mean, what they've turned into. And the Padres will counter with Joe Musgrove tonight, who had the really, really good six shutout innings in his debut on Saturday. Chris Paddock tomorrow pitching in his home state. Lots of family will be there. We know that's important to Chris. And Adrian Morahone on Sunday. I think that anytime – I thought that, you know what, Chris Paddock – kept you in the game. He didn't go six innings. He doesn't deserve a whole lot of credit. But after giving up the three runs, I think two unearned, was that right? In the first inning. He gave up three runs in the first inning. Yeah. Whatever. And, he didn't give up any more. Okay. Adrian Morahone gave up a couple solo home runs. I thought it was a really good start for a guy who had not pitched thrown more than 46 pitches in a major league game. So, what you can count on is having a chance to win, which, as you know, is my favorite cliche because it is incredibly true. And I actually think, save for like Snell, Darvish, and maybe what Joe Musgrove becomes, that's a starting pitcher's job. There's a lot more average starting pitchers out there and bad starting pitchers than there are excellent starting pitchers. If your starting pitchers are giving you a chance to win three runs or less, you got a good staff. Maybe absolutely. Not a playoff series winning staff. You need to, that's a whole different ballgame. But right now, this staff is excellent. And you made a great point, because there's going to be a point where the bullpen goes into a slump and doesn't have a one ERA and isn't stranding every runner that they get. And you're going to be like, damn it, we only won 4 out of 7 when they, were really good or whatever. So that's the thing.
I was going to say, this is a good opportunity for all these pitchers the next 3 days. Thinking especially Paddock and Morihone. Morihone had to come out of the game basically because of where his spot came in the lineup. Now you've got the DH. So here's a situation where, you don't have to worry about being pinch hit for. So, and I'm not saying Morihone's suddenly going to throw 105 pitches or even that Paddock will, but there's a chance here for these guys to go a little bit deeper into games this weekend. And you're absolutely right about the bullpen. I mean, Craig Stammen's the only reliever who's even given up an earned run. I mean, I mentioned Tim Hill gave up the couple homers that came after an error, but those are the only two pitchers in the bullpen who have even given up a run. No, there's no question those guys have all been tremendous, but they're not going to have zero ERAs throughout the season. You're not going to go through like they did the other day and have three relievers throw hitless, perfect three innings the way they did the other night. So they're going to have to hit the ball at some point. They can't score 2 runs a game and expect to get much out of things.
And you already touched on guys that you have to count on that aren't delivering. And again, it's not going to surprise anybody if Manny goes on one of his tears on how he's hitting the ball right now. How hard he's hitting the ball.
Right. And he was terrible last April. I mean, look at his numbers at the start of last year, or not April, in July and everything.
In the first part of August. Right.
Yeah.
So, and then fam, now, Will Myers is hitting, Jake Cronenworth is hitting, Victor Caratini's hitting.
Eric Hosmer, Kevin.
Eric Hosmer's hitting. I knew I was forgetting someone very important, Jay. they have only 7 home runs and 5 of them are solo home runs. You talked about there aren't all an abundance of extra base hits, and they're in runners in scoring position. Actually, they're pretty good over the course of the season. Of course, that was built up in the first 3 games because they're 5 for 24 with runners in scoring position over the last 4 games. So they're 4th in the majors with 30 walks. 18 of those were in the first 3 games. Yeah. So, just whatever. Got to get back to being who, honestly, here's another reason to not be too worried, who they showed they were last year. I mean, every single time that I thought, because in last year it was hyper-focused, 60 games. Oh, man, 7 games in, that's more than 10% of the season. This is big. But every time that you thought, here's where the old Padres show up, they didn't. So,
of course, the other side of that is, you could say, is they showed last season, what we saw last season was 60 games. And so over a stretch, if they had played another 100, maybe they don't keep those numbers up.
I mean,
you're never going to know. But I mean, obviously, they were very good last year for those 60 games, but they weren't good for all of them. I mean, I remember the last time you were probably sitting in that hotel in the regular season, the Padres had lost 5 games in a row. And it was sort of like, wow, that was really a make or break.
Gone, Kirby Yates gone.
Right.
Lost 5 in a row. The bullpen looked terrible. Oh, it was,
And that was when, the whole Slam Diego thing started and they won the next 7, sweeping the Texas teams, and everything turned around. So there's no reason to think that, having an earthquake there in Texas.
No, I forgot we were on video, Jay, and I was putting some notes away, I got a lot going on here, doing my stats and stuff.
Don't let us keep you from anything.
You're keeping me from lunch, but I don't want you to worry about that.
No, I still got a couple hours till my lunchtime. So you're keeping me from the Masters. So, we're kind of even.
That sounds even.
Tell me what you think. You've seen Trent Grisham in sort of over the past year, and then in batting practice and extended hitting this time where he's been hurt. What can we expect? They took their time with him. Should he be basically at about 100%, other than, I guess, adjusting to game conditions or anything? I mean, physically, they were certainly cautious with him. I assume he's at 100% that right now.
Yes. That is exactly what they waited for. It's like, you want to talk about a team that is in it for the long haul or is thinking long haul, is this guy could have started the season. I mean, it was you put him on the IL, the earliest he can come back is today, and they were completely fine with that. But what you said is the key, adjusting to game conditions. One of the things that makes Trent Grisham who he is seeing pitches and being the batter that he is. And so is that back right away? Oh, maybe. Is it right from the start? He was in there even before he was actually swinging. He was standing there in live BPs against really tough pitchers, tracking pitches. So it's clear that that is something that they tried to keep because he looked really good in spring training. He was, in the leadoff spot, by the way, and it was seemed pretty clear that's the direction they were going to go, where it was last year's platoon with me and Fernando Tatis. So I would expect that he would be in the leadoff spot. But that is a huge deal. Like, just, you know, is Trent Grisham locked in right from the start? Because that is one of the main things that Trent Grisham brings to you.
And you mentioned the batting order, and with Grisham at the top, one thing I thought of was, well, you could have Cronenworth hit second, but now you've got two. Do you want two lefties at the top? I really like Will Myers high in the order. And I know that they had their reasons last year why they tried to keep him down in the fifth and sixth spot most of the time and try to, you know, sort of take some of that pressure off of him that maybe he felt as the, you know, quote unquote face of the franchise for a couple of years. He hit second the other day, hit a home run, you know, which sort of a weird home run. I mean, it was, you know, I think about an 82 degree launch angle, it felt like.
Yeah. And it was like, I was going to say it was like 37 miles an hour. And it's just like, whoa.
Yeah.
I've seen all these balls die at Petco this year.
Right.
It's like, that ball just went to the seats.
Yeah. Is there a chance we see Will Myers bat second and then, you know, Cronenworth drops to like the sixth spot or something? Or how much do you think that Tingler likes sort of trying to alternate left and right when he can?
Absolutely big to him. I mean, and big to the organization, obviously. Mm-hmm. Let's all remember that Jace Tingler doesn't make these decisions in a vacuum.
Sure.
You know, he's not the guy who sat Eric Hosmer on his own after 3 days. But absolutely that I think that you could put Will second. And you already touched on the reasons you didn't last year. And hey, it is what it is. If they don't think that Will Myers is ready to hit second because, you know, Will just does better down in the order, then okay, so be it. All right. We live with that. But the fact is you're making $20 million a year. Yeah. You've shown over all of last season and so far this season. And I was looking, despite whatever, besides the home run, and I was looking, what were Will's at-bats like live in the two hole? Just because it's been such a big deal. And he looked fine. He didn't look like he was pressing. There's something in his head. He was fine. So I don't think that's going to be an issue going forward. And I know that Jake Cronenworth has had some really good at bats. And that's a guy I like him a little down in the order for that very reason, is that what he can give you down in the order. So
now if you're doing that, then you're going to need, and they could put Profar there tonight or they could put Pham. But to me, if you're going to do that alternating thing, and I know Myers and Machado would be two righties in a row, but to me, Machado's a guy that it doesn't matter. When he's right, he's going to hit anybody. So if you're going to have Hosmer hit fourth, then you could have maybe Pham hit fifth, but he's, you know, you can't have 174 Tommy Pham in that.
But at this point in game eight, I don't think you're paying attention to 174 Tommy Pham.
Right.
He hasn't been Manny, but he's crushed some balls.
Yeah.
And I think you still have to, at some point, you're absolutely right. But right now you still put Pham fifth because you believe that he is capable of that spot.
Right. So you put him there and then you can have Cronenworth hit sixth and Profar seven and
Caratini,
and then have I've lost my mind. Oh, Kim could hit, not, you know, you could have Kim hit ninth at this point. And Kim, we should talk about Kim because it looks like he's probably going to play shortstop most of the time for the next, at least for the week. I don't know what your thoughts are about Tatis and if he's going to be back in 10 days. Maybe we should start with that.
I'm surprised that we made it this long, and I'm actually grateful for it because every time that I'm on the radio, and it's absolutely the right call, it's just, it's 10 or 15 minutes of Tatis, and it's, you know, and it's absolutely the right call because it's a huge topic, but here we are 20 and a half minutes in, and we are going to address Tatis. For me, Jay, it's not so much when he comes back, though we'll talk about that. It's how long he lasts. And there is not anyone in this organization that's going to tell you that they're confident. Now, they're not saying he's not going to, but there's not anyone that'll tell you or try to fool you, Tatis, we're good. He's going to make it through the season. Absolutely not. I do believe there's a chance he comes back for the Dodger series, be it right away or sometime in it or the next week before the second Dodger series, because look, if he was feeling good already, and that's been the MO, is he feels fine a day or two later, then okay, sure. But it's a matter of the work they need to do to maintain him being able to stay in that lineup. And then, quite frankly, to get a little lucky.
Right. And my question was going to be on that, and you touched on it a little bit, is there any benefit to resting for, as opposed to resting for 10 days, is there any benefit to resting for 20 days? Because at that point, he's more likely when he comes back to be able to last longer. Or is it just a situation, which I have a feeling this might be the case, completely uninformed, but I have a feeling whenever he plays, he's going to be at risk no matter what. And waiting 10 more days isn't going to make a difference. Is that the sense you're getting, that they feel like, hey, let's just, if he's okay, we'll get him out there, we'll ride it for as long as we can. And if it pops out again, then we'll have to make this decision again, whether we keep going through this or whether we have surgery. To me, the only issue in having surgery or not having surgery at this point, one or the other, is there any chance of long-term damage? And if the Padres honestly believe that there's no chance of doing more long-term damage, I have no issue, wouldn't criticize them for trying to ride this out, because doing surgery now isn't going to do you any good as far as next year.
Right. Do it a month from now. It's the same as doing it now.
3 months from now. Right. Or 3 months from now. Right. Right. Yes. 3 months from now. So I guess that's a long way of saying, are they just going to get him out there when he feels like he's ready and sort of, you know, here we go, let's cross our fingers and see what happens?
First, I'll say that, you know, I'm gonna ask the specific question that you asked, but mine only slightly more informed than you, because I have talked to orthopedic surgeons over and former team doctors, right, and current team doctors, by the way, over the last few days, is that you are correct that 10, 20, 30 days. I mean, we're not talking about the offseason where, hey, give this guy 3 months. We're not going to do surgery. We think he can make it through the season. 3 months of shoulder exercises and strengthening and all that. And that'll make a difference, maybe. 10, 20 days, there isn't. It's when he goes out there, we're talking about a joint here. It's an unstable joint. Look at all the things that we can do. Even me with my tennis shoulder. Look at me. All these things you can do with your shoulder. Well, that just makes it more prone to come out. And the more it comes out, the more it comes out. That's what we've learned here too with Tatis. So I think when he's ready, he goes. But I do promise you that I'm going to follow up when we get off this podcast. I'm going to follow up and say, hey, would there be a difference between, say, 10 days and a month or something like that? But it is definitely my sense that, and that's why I say, okay, yeah, I think that's entirely possible he could be back in 10 days. Where are we at when he comes back in 10 days, 2 days after that, and 6 days after that, and a month after that? That is far more important.
I want to hear more about this tennis shoulder. Did we miss a chance for you to be the next Roger Federer? I mean, what could you have challenged for all these Grand Slams here?
I certainly thought that I was better than I was, but I was pretty good. And I'll tell you this, yesterday I saw my buddy Michael Gelkin. Michael Gelkin, a virile 33-year-old, he has a dog. This dog is incredible. I mean, it the straight line speed on this dog, even killed the combine. It's amazing. So we go to this park and he's throwing, and Michael just throwing. And I know I can't, but I can't let Michael down. So I take the ball and I throw it about 7 feet. I threw the ball. No, a little further than that, but my velo is about 32 miles an hour. This shoulder is wrecked. So anyway, you know, most of us, by the way, could walk around with what Tatis has. So, right. That's not a big deal. Tatis, a professional athlete, is the guy who needs to get his shoulder fixed. All right, before we wrap it up, you said you wanted to talk about Kim. Absolutely convinced, based on talking to people inside the organization and what I saw with my own eyes, that, man, they're going to have to be really careful about this guy and, you know, how they match him up facing pitchers that throw hard. Well, the other day he faced three pitches that were around 95, 96, in play, and he put them in play well. Two of them were barreled up. I think that's a positive sign, and I do absolutely believe that their intention, it's at least on Thursday, their intention was to give this guy a period of time in which he could play and show what he can do as a regular, rather than, because they have a lot of options there.
Sure.
At shortstop. I mean, they got middle infielders, you know, up the kazoo. And so, and they can do a lot of mixing and matching, but I think that they would love to see Ha-Sung Kim, you know, be a guy who can get on base a couple times a game for him and play a solid shortstop. And in order to see that, they need to see him for a few games.
Right. And that makes perfect sense. I mean, they did spend, you know, 28 million, commit 28 million plus the 5 million transfer fee or whatever you want to call it. So, I mean, if they're going to make an investment like that, they obviously believed in him. And I would think there's no doubt that he would be the first option. The question becomes, and maybe it's not a question if Tatis is going to come back a week from today. What I was going to say, if this is, becomes a long-term thing, which, you know, unfortunately it could be at any point after Tatis comes back. If it does, how much rope does he have at that point? And I guess, you know, we're not going to know, and we may never know, because if he comes out and he produces, then he's going to be, you know, he would be the guy. So this is, here's another guy. Here's an opportunity for somebody to take advantage of a situation that he's been presented with and to produce and you know, and help the team.
Absolutely. That's kind of what they need to count on. I mean, at some point, like I said, and why I was putting significance on this road trip, I mean, Tatis is gone. It's huge. Like, that's a slump buster, that guy right there, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about what Yu Darvish did the other day, stopping a losing streak of two games. That's, you know, he's a stopper. Tatis is a slump buster. They need other people to step up, and it goes beyond Manny and Pham, though they need to, you know, do that as well, because that's what they're getting paid for. But Ha-Seong Kim needs to, you know, Ha-Seong Kim needs to be a good player. That's all. He's not going to be Tatis. He needs to be a good player. Jorge Mateo needs to be a good player. Jake Cronenworth needs to be a solid player. Eric Hosmer needs to, you know, produce similar to what he's doing now. There we go. Jay, and we didn't talk about the defense. Let's wait until next series to talk about the defense. Some of these things are fluky. I know these guys are better than this. They work really hard. They worked so hard on it in the spring. I think it was maybe just kind of a, I don't know, a phase and some stuff. So.
All right. Enjoy your weekend down there and your trip to Pittsburgh. And we will, I know we both love that ballpark, that city. Oh. Good time of year to be there.
One of my favorites.
Enjoy that, and we'll talk to everyone on Monday.
Thank you, everybody.